Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. See, not only am I a radio host, but I can also beatbox. What's up, y'all? Good evening. It is Tuesday, June 4, 2019, first Tuesday of the month of June. 8 o'clock on the East Coast. 2019 is about six months away from being over. It's going to be 2020. This year's going by pretty quick. Hello, I am your host, Aunt Canary, coming to you live from the capital of North Kakilaki, south side of Raleigh. Tonight, we are going to be talking about something that a lot of people don't talk about, usually. So this may be one of those shows where I'm doing all the talking and everybody's listening, but that's fine. That's fine. So we're going to be talking about tonight, in case you don't know, we're going to be talking about the bail bond system in this country. And it is pretty jacked up. I've got three clips to play for you with some information. I've got a couple of things to read to you that'll kind of give a background on what we're going to be talking about tonight. But in case you want to call, I'll give you the number, 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. So we're going to get started on this because we've got until 9:30 to cover this, so we're going to cover it. A lot of the technical stuff I'm not going to cover because you can read up on that anytime you want to. But this is kind of, I say technical, but a lot of it is kind of technical if you don't understand it. Because what the bail system is, in a nutshell, and hopefully I won't be too, I don't want to get too technical, but what it is, if you get arrested, you'll go to the jail, you'll be processed to the jail. They'll get all your information and take your mugshot and blah, blah, blah. And then depending on what you are accused of doing, you will see a judge or a magistrate. Now, a lot of states, they have where they do all this stuff by video or whatever, but you'll go before a judge, and then the judge, decides whether or not you have a bail, depending on the crime that you committed. And this goes back to way, 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 way back in the day. This goes back to when the country was founded, back into the 1700s. That's how far back it goes. So, with that being said, you automatically know that the bail system is, like a lot of the laws in this country, especially when it comes down to the justice system, is going to be biased. It's going to be racist, and it is. And they've done studies on this. And there are some states that are changing how this works in various states. And in a minute, I'll read to you the types of bails. And as a matter of fact, there are 12 types of bails in this country, and states use, all kinds. So, so all of these might not apply to where you live. And then I'll read you these, and then I'll read you a couple of stories, and then we'll go to the clips, give you a little bit more information. But there are some states that are trying to fix this, because this is a pretty big problem. So let me just read this to you right quick. So Bail laws vary from state to state. Generally, a person charged with a non-capital crime can be expected to be granted a bail. Some states have enacted statutes modeled on federal law that permit pretrial detention of persons charged with serious violent offenses if it can be demonstrated that the defendant is a flight risk or a danger to the community. Since 2014, New Jersey and Alaska have enacted reforms that have abolished cash bail for the majority of cases. These states now give defendants a supervised release or mandatory detention with the conditions determined with a risk assessment. As of 2008, only four states, Illinois, Kentucky, Oregon, and Wisconsin, had abolished commercial for-profit bail bonds by bail bondsmen and required deposits to courts instead. As of 2012, Nebraska and Maine, in addition to the aforementioned Illinois, Kentucky, Oregon, and Wisconsin, prohibited surety bail bonds. California uses a bail schedule system, and judges in state court are directed to refer to the bail schedule while also taking into account the defendant's criminal record and whether the defendant poses a danger to the community. California plans to eliminate cash bail entirely as of October 1st, 2019, replacing it with a court-determined risk assessment of the individual defendant. Most courts in Texas determine bail in accord with a fixed schedule without consideration of the defendant's ability to pay the scheduled amount. And Tennessee, all offenses are bailable, but bail may be denied to those accused of capital crimes, which in that case would be something like murder. I'm going to read you the 12, and then I'll just read you a little summary of all of them. The 12. And these are the types of bonds that we have in the United States. A surety bond, a recognizance, or ROR, unsecured bail, percentage bail, citation release, property bond, immigration bond, cash, pretrial services, combinations, conditions of release, and protective order. Now, with the surety bond, this is a third party agrees to be responsible for the debt or obligation of the defendant. In many jurisdictions, this service is provided commercially by a bail bondsman, where the agent will receive 10% of the bail amount up front and will keep that amount regardless of whether the defendant appears in court. The court in many jurisdictions, especially states that as of 2012, prohibited surety bail bondsmen, Oregon, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Illinois, Kentucky, and Maine, may demand a certain amount of the bail, typically 10%, to be given to the court, which is known as surety on the bond, and unlike with bail bondsmen, is returned if the defendant does not violate the conditions of bail. The bail agent guarantees to the court that they will pay the forfeited bond if a defendant fails to appear for their scheduled court appearances. So the third party must have adequate assets to satisfy the face value of the bond. In turn, the bond agency charges a premium for the service and usually requires a collateral from the guarantor. The bail agent then posts a bond for the amount of the bail to guarantee the arrestee's return to court. So in that case, somebody got arrested and their bail was $1,000, they'd have to pay $100 for the bond. Excuse me, I got something in my throat. And then, around here, and I'm sure in another state, downtown where the courthouse is, there are a lot of bail officers around. And, you can probably look in the phone book and find bail bondsmen all over the place. But they get a cut. They get some of the money. Then they have that money just in the case somebody decides they don't show up for court. They keep the money. No, they keep the money. But then if they do go to court, then it's, depending on the case and all that kind of stuff, you may end up getting the money back. But they pretty much do that one just to make sure that you show up to court for your court trial. Excuse me. A recognizance is when an accused is released on recognizance. On recognizances, he or she promises to the court to attend all required judicial proceedings and will not engage in illegal activity or other prohibited conduct as set by the court. Typically, a monetary amount is set by the court, but is not paid by the defendant unless the court orders it forfeited. This is called an unsecured appearance bond or release on one's own recognizance. And you hear that sometime, say that, you know, defendant was released on his own recognizance, which means they've got to go back to court. If they don't go back to court, then they're going to get tracked down and put in jail. The next one is unsecured bail. This is a release without a deposit, but it differs from a recognizance in that the defendant must pay a fee upon reaching the terms of the bail. Percentage bail. The defendant deposits only a percentage of the bail bond of the bail's amount, usually 10%, with the court clerk. Citation release. This process involves the issuance of a citation by the arresting officer to the arrestee, informing the arrestee that he or she must appear at an appointed court date. These usually occur immediately after an individual is arrested and no financial security is taken. Property bond. The accused or a person acting on his behalf pledges real property having a value of at least equal to the amount of the bail. If the principal fails to appear for a trial, the state can levy or institute foreclosure proceedings against the property to recover the bail. Used in rare cases and in certain jurisdictions, often the equity of the property must be twice the amount of the bail set. Immigration bond, used when the defendant that has been arrested is an illegal immigrant. This is a federal bond and not a state bond. The defendant deals directly with either Department of Homeland Security or the Bureau of Immigration and Custom Enforcement. Cash. Cash only is the only form of bail that the court will accept is cash. Court-ordered cash bonds require the total amount of bail to be posted in cash. The court holds this money until the case is concluded. Cash bonds are typically ordered by the court for the following reasons. When the court believes the defendant is a flight risk, when the court issues a warrant of unpaid fines, and when the defendant has failed to appear for a prior hearing. Cash bonds provide a powerful incentive for defendants to appear for their hearings. If the defendant does not appear as instructed, the cash bond is forfeited and a bench warrant is issued. If the defendant shows up for their scheduled court appearances, the cash is returned to the person who posted the bond. Anyone, including the defendant, can post a cash bond. If the defendant posts his own bond, the court will deduct fines and costs from the bond before returning any balance. Pretrial services. A defendant is released to the supervision of a pretrial service officer, similar to a probation officer. In most cases, defendants have no financial obligation to be supervised. The pretrial services program can include phone or in-person check-ins, drug testing, court reminders, and any other condition the judges deem necessary. Combinations. Courts often allow defendants to post cash bail or surety bond and then impose further conditions, as mentioned, to protect the community or ensure attendance. Conditions of release. Many varied non-monetary conditions and restrictions on liberty can be imposed by a court to ensure that a person released into the community will appear in court and will not commit any more crimes. Common examples include mandatory calls to the police, regular check-ins with a pretrial services program, surrendering passports, home detention, electronic monitoring, drug testing, alcohol counseling, surrendering firearms. And the last one, protective order, also called an order of protection or restraining order. One very common feature of any conditional release, whether on bail, bond, or condition, is a court order requiring defendant to refrain from criminal activity against the alleged crime victim or stay away from and have no contact with the alleged crime victim. The former is a limited order, the latter a full order. Violation of the order can subject the defendant to automatic forfeiture of bail and further fine or imprisonment. So those are the 12 bails, types of bails that we use in this country. Now the problem with those, some of these, here for example, in other words, if you have money and you get arrested for something, you can pay it and then you're out in, you know, a few hours. And a lot of people can't afford that. Here's one, like in the high profile cases of Bernie Madoff, which, I mean, you talking about crook. He avoided pretrial detention despite huge flight risk simply because he had the money to pay the court exorbitant sums. This is in accordance to the current interpretation of the Bail Reform Act of 1984, which allows the wealthy to avoid pretrial detainment by paying for highly restrictive measures that ensure constant supervision. This means that a poor defendant being held in jail while waiting for a trial, so the poor defendant will stay in jail while a wealthy defendant could only face house arrest while waiting trial for the same offense. Bail reformers claim that this is a direct violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, which states that laws must be applied against all citizens equally. We already know that that doesn't happen. Another problem we have is unnecessary incarceration. The reason why most jails are full is because a lot of people in jails shouldn't be in jail in the first place. Because, you know, if poor people go into jail and they can't afford to bond out, and they got to sit there until the trial date comes. And I think in one of the videos, one of the clips, it says that, you know, most of the time you're talking about weeks in between getting put in jail and getting a trial date. So if you don't have the money to get out, you're sitting in jail for 2-3 weeks, however long it is before you actually go to appear in front of a judge. And if you don't have the money, then you sit there for however long it is until your time is next. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. As of August 2018, two states have abolished cash bail for the majority of court cases. In 2014, New Jersey enacted reforms that took effect on January 1, 2017. All criminal defendants are now assessed with a point value system to determine whether they should be released from custody, held in jail until trial, or subject to alternative procedures, including house arrest, electronic monitoring, and in limited cases, cash bail, to ensure public safety and the defendant's appearance in court. Alaska adopted a similar reform in 2016, which took effect in 2018. So right now there is a push to reform that because it's unfair against a lot of people. The rate of marijuana use is about the same for blacks and whites, although more blacks say they have never used marijuana, but blacks are more than 3 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession. Whites use other illicit drugs more often and are arrested at lower rates. Blacks receive sentences that are 20% longer for committing the same crimes as whites. White suspects are often plea deals more often. Black drivers are stopped more often by police. Black people are searched more often by law enforcement officers. African Americans are 2.5 times more likely to be shot and killed by police. Black people are 4 times more likely to be killed by police if they are unarmed and not attacking. But the inequities behind all of these statistics pale in comparison to the disparities of the money bail system. In a new economic analysis by the Hampton Project at the Brookings Institution, exposes the external existential problems of this legal calamity entitled, this is entitled The Economics of Bail and Pretrial Detention. Here's what they came up with. The money bail system is biased against black suspects, but that is not why it is so bad. The data that shows that bail disproportionately affects the poor is not the reason why this issue is so important, nor is it the inherent immorality of the bail system related to the fact that it contributes to America's mass incarceration industry. So we already know that black people are 13% of the population, but they're like 44% of the jail population. And the reasons why money is immoral, racist, and unconscionable, is unfair. It's twofold. According to the dictates of the Constitution, every single one of the millions of people incarcerated because of money bail is innocent. Everyone knows money bail does not work. They went on to some more statistics. I'm not going to read all this, but the number of people in jail who have not been convicted of a crime has more than doubled since the early 90s. In 1990, about half the people locked in local jails had not been convicted of a crime. In 2016, the number had grown to 65%, from about 200,000 inmates to more than 450,000 inmates. And the reason for this is bail. Here's something. Okay. Just as judges give black people longer prison sentences, statistics show that black defendants receive higher bail amounts and are less likely to be released without bail. According to a 2017 report by the ACLU and Color of Change, 70% of people in local jails have not been found guilty of a crime. Most of the people, 60%, in jail are there because they can't afford bail. The median income of people in jail because of bail is $16,000 a year, compared with $33,000 for the rest of the country. Because of income disparities, it also means that black defendants are more likely to plead guilty to a crime because they can't afford bail. The report uncovers some not-so-surprising statistics. Bail for black defendants is, on average, $10,000 higher than bail for white defendants, according to a recent Princeton study. White defendants are released on their own recognizance more often than black defendants, but whites are more likely to be arrested for committing a crime while they are out on bail. Black men and women aged 23 to 39 held in local jails earned a median income of only $900 and $568, respectively, in the month prior to being held. Black defendants between ages 18 and 29 receive higher bail amounts and are less likely to be released on recognizance than were white defendants. In Maryland, the $250 million in bail fees are overwhelmingly paid by black defendants. In New Orleans, black residents paid 84% of bail premiums and associated fees. Let's see. Maybe I'll save this last one for last. So we're going to jump into this first clip because it's a long clip, but it's got a lot of information in it. We'll do that and be right back.
If you fail to appear on a bail bond, the bail insurance industry is going to find you, and we are going to put you back. We take what we do very seriously.
The bail bond industry is a very profitable industry. Bail isn't set based upon one's ability to pay.
They talking $500,000, $1 million. Like, who got that type of money?
What we're seeing is an enormous transfer of wealth of billions of dollars a year from the poorest people in our society to some of the richest people in our society, the insurance companies that are underwriting the bail bond industry. If there are two people who are arrested in a drug interaction and they come down to the police station and one of them has $300 and the other one doesn't, it's unconstitutional to cage the person who doesn't have that money but to let the other person go just because she has money in her pocket.
There are no other nations except the Philippines allowing bail bondsmen. They're not allowed anywhere else in the Western world.
The man got you? Don't worry. Call East Coast Bail Bonds. 1% down. Easy payment to $25 a week. East Coast Bail Bonds serves the entire Maryland region.
Bail Bonds. How much money are you guys working with?
$400 or $500.
That's fine. I'll get her out and you owe me a couple bucks.
I finance people's freedom.
You call us? I'll say, how much your bail? Say $10,000. Okay, how much money you have? Well, I got money in the bank. Okay, who's going to sign for you? The signer is a person that's going to say that you're going to appear in court. First off, when you bail out, you have to come in here. You have to do your paperwork. We call you for your court date. Some people are high risk. We make them check in every week. Because if you don't go to court, it's a potential for us to lose all that money. We catch a lot of people on Facebook. You get a good-looking girl on that Facebook, and every guy's biting. Women has brought down countries. We were the first ones to come up with a payment plan. This is your payments. This is how many payments, monthly, this. I got people pay $10 a week.
Try and get her to give us a call, because she does have three accounts with us.
So. And then these girls here,
was on
so all they do is call people day and night and tell them that they owe us money.
I met people that did very well off of like $25 million a year. I do $25 million in 2 months sometimes.
The new B-shirts, loading in a truck now. And this is nothing. This is probably 4,000 shirts.
Everybody knows Vinny does the shirts. Vinny does all the marketing, stuff like that. I sponsor everything.
My goal was to build a brand. When you come to Maryland, you think East Coast.
Thank you. East Coast, y'all.
We love people that come through the hood.
A lot of guys just go in the phone books and do that bullshit. There are so many bail bondsmen down here, but you brand yourself. You got to go out and attack the business and get the business.
Are you ready for this bikini contest? He says bail bonds in the house.
Why can't I have every single bail? Why not? Is that wrong? You know, a guy fucking in a rich and says, oh, well, I don't want all the money. I just want some of the money. That's bullshit. I want all the bails. If I can't get all the bails, I'll settle for what I can get. But I don't like to settle. I want them all.
River Watch, make some noise one more time. East Coast Bail Bonds for putting this together each and every week.
We're on North and Fulton. Ask any police officer. This is considered one of the most dangerous corners in the city of Baltimore. Why not put an officer on?
When the riots went down, we came down and gave out shirts.
I'm looking at that they're distributing East Coast Bail Bond t-shirts. And I don't think that could happen in our neighborhoods.
Rocking y'all since 96!
To me, I think it sends the wrong message. I bleed Baltimore. That could have a negative connotation about it, especially with the high murder rate that we have. But I guess as long as you feel as though that you're getting something free for nothing, and you're not. You're not. The propaganda that they're putting out with these T-shirts, all you're doing is continuing to help demoralize your community.
John, have no idea what the hell is going on out here in the hood. If you have a baby and you ain't got no job, tell me what you're going to do. You're going to sling drugs. Okay, now the police come get your ass. Then the bell bomber, here you come when you get caught all up.
Every 4 years, there's elections, and you have to go through this whole education process all over again with a lot of the committees. Up until now, we've been able to get our point of view across in an honest way. So we've been able to stay in business in Maryland.
You got people that want to do away with the bail bond business that have no idea what the bail bond business is. We bail people out. Yes, we make money from it. We put them back in jail if they don't go to jail. Study it. Show me, somebody come tell me why they should do away with bail bondsmen.
Alan was in the house, and a couple of his buddies came up and was like, yo, let's go downtown. They zapping out down there.
Now the governor has declared a state of emergency.
We see protesters there scuffling with police.
That night, the news came on. We seen him on top of the car acting crazy. He was like, oh, Lord, I think I might need a lawyer. So we laughed it off. I'm like, Alan, you broke a car window. They're not going to make nothing out of that. My son took it on his own and turned himself in. When he called me back the next day, he said, Ma, guess what? I said, what? He said, my bill, $500,000, $500,000. I said, boy, stop lying. What's your bill? He said, Ma, I'm not lying. I just dropped the phone, and I just started screaming. My son want to kill himself. That's how bad it is.
Alan Bullock's case, an individual caught on film destroying property, was given a bail much higher than even the police officers that were charged with the death of Freddie Gray. The pretrial bail industry is set up so that one has to put up security, whether it's cash or whether it's going to a bondsman and paying them a premium. But when you have to pay a bondsman 10% and you never get that money back, then people are literally paying tens of thousands of dollars just to get their loved ones out of jail. And there's no guarantee that those cases are even going to go to trial. Bail isn't set based upon one's ability to pay. There are no standardization. Each judge determines bail on their own. Those with means get out and prepare for trial, and those that are poor sit. And they sit in cages. They sit in decrepit conditions for the most part. The average time is about 7 or 8 months in the state of Maryland where you sit prior to trial. And that puts enormous pressure once the case comes up for trial for someone to plead guilty just to get out of jail.
Most guys can't afford their bail. They talking $500,000, $1 million. Like, who got that type of money? Your life on the line both ways. So you're trying your hardest to get out, but the money ain't gonna get you out, so you gotta take the plea.
And
I mean, even if you ain't guilty, you're just trying to get out of there.
Pretrial detention has a disparate effect on minorities, on communities of color. On the day of Freddie Gray's funeral, over 400 folks were arrested. 263 people were detained, most of them without even charges being brought against them. They were just swept up in neighborhoods and brought to the detention center.
The night of the riot, we were sitting on North and Fulton where my cousin lived. Police and all that coming through. I told them I was going home. I was on the way to get to my kids and my girl. So they said no. Oh, they arrested me. Threw me in the back of the paddy wagon. Took me down Central Bookman. I didn't know what I was charged with at first. My bail was set to $250,000. And all the police got locked up. I'm like, dang, they locked up for manslaughter. Why? Their bail the same as mine. And mine is a petty charge. My girl was left with the two kids, and she had a job, and a lot of financial stuff got messed up because she had nobody there to help her. Like, everything just went downhill when I got locked up, everything.
The thing that strikes me about Dominic's case is it exemplifies the problems with the bail system. He was given an exorbitant bail, something that I'd see normally in an extremely violent case, usually a felony case. His case ended up being dismissed by the state after he spent over a month in jail on a bail that he couldn't make.
We have 500,000 human beings in a cage on any given night in this country solely because they can't afford to make a payment to get out. And we've so lost sense of how brutal a thing it is to do to a human being, to cage them. For a long time, we were not in our society treating this issue as the emergency that it is. And the key is to understand why, and I think it's because when you do something so often, I think it's human nature to become desensitized to it. The 14th Amendment prohibits treating people differently. So if there are two people who are arrested, let's say in a drug interaction, and they come down from the police station and one of them has $300 and the other one doesn't, it's unconstitutional to cage the person who doesn't have that money, but to let the other person go just because she has money in her pocket. The fundamental principle in our legal system is you can't jail a poor person when in the same circumstances a rich person will be set free. I decided to apply these 14th Amendment arguments to our bail cases. This year, we've filed 7 class action lawsuits challenging the American system of money bail. The first 6 cities have all agreed to get rid of the use of secured money bail for misdemeanor arrestees. One of the exciting things about this topic is that for so long, things have been happening that are so illegal that now that attention is being paid to them and light is being shed on what's been going on in these courts and jails all around the country, we're starting to see some change.
There are no other nations except the Philippines and the United States who have made such poor decisions about allowing bail bondsmen. They're not allowed anywhere else in the Western world. Bondsmen are legal in Washington, but we don't have any bondsmen and haven't had them for a long time.
Here in Washington, D.C., of the people coming in through lockup, a good 85 to 90% are going to appear in front of the judge. They'll end up being unshackled, handcuffs removed, and walking out the door of the courthouse because money is not used here. People are not remanded back to the jail in order to wait until a bail bond is, posted on their behalf.
I'm Cliff Keenan. I'm the director of the Pretrial Services Agency for the District of Columbia. We believe our system is more effective than the money bail system. In fact, today, our jail is probably at 45% of its capacity because we're not seeing people being detained because they don't have the ability to put up money bail that's been imposed by a judge. In other jurisdictions, the judge is not looking at the individual risk factors associated with the person. They're only looking at the charge. Here, our risk assessment provides a whole wealth of information about which conditions, if any, need to be applied.
A day, we're processing anyone from a minor charge of simple assault all the way to murder. And we are a 24-hour operation. So as soon as the arrest begins, our work begins. Once he gets here from the police district, we begin interviewing the defendant. Take that information along with his criminal history and we create what we call the bail report. And that recommendation is the key. I think here at pretrial, we really firmly believe that we can effectively supervise people in the community without using money.
For the most part, persons who are charged with low-level felonies and most misdemeanors, unless they have a serious criminal record, are going to be released on some conditions, all the way up to our high-intensity supervision program, which requires placement of a GPS bracelet on them, where we can monitor a curfew or stay-away conditions as ordered by the judge.
Pretrial services provides to me a report, and in that report, are the individual's ties to the community. Criminal history is included. Medical history is included. Mental health related history is included. All of those things taken together make it a lot easier for me to decide what to do. We have programs that allow for judges to place individuals into the community, but with further conditions. Another release modem, if you will.
My name is Eugene Isaac. I'm from Washington, D.C. I'm an ex-offender, returned citizen. I end up down in drug court with a felony, went out there and tried to sell some drugs to undercover police officer and to support my habit. I went in front of the judge, and by my record, I haven't had a charge in almost 20-some years. I got out on personal reconnaissance. Told my caseworker, I said, I just need a chance. I need an opportunity, you know. And for some reason, she believed in me. She was able to get me into detox at Providence Hospital in August the 7th of 09. That was my last time I had a drink or a drug. You know, I knew this was the end for me to turn my life around. My daughters really, you know, they was really separate from me. I wasn't really a father to them, you know, because I was so caught up into the drug thing. But now we got an awesome relationship. And to this day, me and my daughters, we made a pact that we have nothing that's going to break us apart. If it's something we have a problem with each other, we're going to have to go out and talk about it. As long as I stay alcohol and drug free, my kids will be in my life, you know, and I won't give that up for nothing anymore. This is something I always wanted.
One obstacle to any kind of reform in the system is just inertia. We have this irrational view that the way to lead to less crime is to cage people who we think committed those crimes. There's no evidence to support it, and yet it's the foundational premise of our criminal legal system.
It is an outrageous case of justice derailed. How could it take 3 years for prosecutors in the Bronx DA's office to figure out they didn't have a case while a teenager sat in jail on Rikers?
You made a decision that you were going to fight this.
That's correct.
How'd you come to that conclusion?
Because I didn't feel comfortable saying I did it. If I just cop out and say that I did it, nothing's going to be done about it. I didn't do it. No justice is served. Nobody hears nothing at all. I felt like I had to fight. I had to fight.
Cleve Browder case was a tragedy. A lot of people have become aware of the problem now because of a high-profile case like that, but the need for reform has been there for a long, long time. And in a case where it's $1,000 or less of a bail, only about 18% of people are able to make that bail. My legislation would do away with bail entirely. It would not even be an option in court anymore. Judges would have three new options. They could propose a conditional release, they could release someone on their own recognizance, or in the most serious cases, can remand them to jail. And that would follow after a recommendation from a pretrial services agency that would be established.
We're portrayed as these evil bail bondsmen that make money, and senators make money, judges make money. Everybody has to feed their families. I pay every single tax dollar my accountant tells me to pay. I pay every single one of them.
Did your grandson have a criminal defense attorney?
You know, I always say with our business, with Empire, it's like the state might be able to come in here. They're not going to find Fugazi crap. They're not going to find corruption. They're not going to find all kinds of hullabaloo. My name is Michelle Eskenazi. I'm the CEO at Empire Bail Bonds. I'm also the CEO at Empire Bonding and Insurance Co., which is our family-owned bail insurance company.
Hey.
Did you go to court today?
Yes.
You look like you went to court today. You are fabulous. How's your case going? The reason that I think that the government seeks to move to a system of pretrial release is because there's a financial motivation in it. I mean, they see that there's money on this side of the coin, if you will.
What's your number? That's for real?
Yeah, why? Do we seem like we're not for real? If the taxpayers in New York City could possibly have their choice, I guarantee you they would choose parks and streets and helping the homeless rather than funding pretrial release services. Just relax, man. This ain't Rikers Island. Calm down.
Well, the argument that doing away with bail would be more expensive is completely facetious because, yes, the bail bondsman may not cost the taxpayers any money, but keeping someone in jail costs the taxpayers a tremendous amount of money. In New York alone, it's over $1 billion a year. The bail bondsmen are not getting paid by the government while they're out there making sure that someone shows up. But that doesn't account for thousands and thousands of people that are in jail every day awaiting trial who shouldn't be.
One of the things that New York City really didn't put their heads together and think about is low-level offenders. So you're releasing people on misdemeanors and violations, and now they fail to appear. Who's going to pick them up? There's no answer. This gentleman here is the best bail enforcement agent, period. What I always say about him is if you're running from him, you better keep running. He will devote the rest of his God-given life to finding you.
Hold your dog! Hold your dog! He's gonna get shot right in the fucking head! Hold your dog!
Hold your dog!
Hold your dog! We're gonna knock the door down!
Hold your fucking dog before I shoot him!
The notion of money bail, you know, might have made sense several hundred years ago when someone could flee on horseback to a different jurisdiction and you needed to incentivize someone to go down and get them and bring them back and then reward them for it. Most people charged with crimes now in our legal system are impoverished people who've never left the geographic area in which they are alleged to have committed a crime.
Kick it in, kick it out. There you go. Got shoes in there, bro? All right, well, tell your brother to bring you some shoes. You want to put them there like that. Well, put your shoes right
around. This is not about making money or losing money. This is about people losing their freedom, losing their liberty, and spending time in jail when they have not been convicted of a crime. When that's happening, something is dreadfully wrong, and we need to change it no matter the cost. We shouldn't be afraid to make reforms and to make things better because of an industry concern in this case.
We are a unique insurance policy because we are not insuring a vehicle. We are insuring human behavior. So we're involved in that human behavior with the circle of love.
Do you know who signed for you? Do you know, like, there's people that actually give a fuck about you, that signed for you $15,000 worth? Does that even occur to you?
Yeah, and I'm not.
You didn't. You're full of shit. Okay, don't fucking lie to me. Because you're full of shit, okay? Because you didn't come in here the next fucking day and try to clear up your warrant. Like every other fucking asshole. You didn't come in here and try to clear up your fucking warrant, did you?
No, I was gonna go today.
Because you don't give a shit about your family, isn't that right? You're full of shit.
I went to court.
I'm gonna make sure the judge doesn't set bail on your risky ass. I hope you bend over for the soap when you get in there. Give him a fucking shirt, okay?
I was there, man.
Okay.
I messed up.
But, right. I know you messed up.
I'm not trying to.
You're very good at that.
I missed the court.
No.
They changed the court.
Why did you get arrested? Because you're an upstanding citizen?
No. I had a drug problem before I went in.
Oh, okay. Fine. Well, that's worth it, man.
I'm worried that if we don't address these issues now, in this moment where people are finally paying attention, we'll never do it. If somehow we lose that outrage and we go back to being the society of indifference and inertia in these areas, the policies of the last 3 or 4 decades that have wrought so much devastation in impoverished communities will be made a permanent feature of American society.
The bail bonding industry, which I get very tired of talking about, they aren't really the issue. Money is the issue. Once you do away with money, the bondsmen go away. Money pervades the justice system. Money pervades America.
You're going to have all these people that are going to be running around with warrants, and then they're going to say, we need more government money, i.e. taxpayer money, to pay for to lock these people up when you didn't have to do it in the first place. If somebody shows me that it's more economical and it's smarter, then I guess I'll find something else to do. Maybe I'll fucking make pizzas. You know what I mean? Maybe I'll ride a dirt bike and become a 12 o'clock boy.
So that was the end of that clip. Now, let's go to the next one.
The U.S. jails more people than any other country, and it's one of only 2 countries that has a for-profit bail system. What does that mean? Well, the system works like this. Say you're arrested for allegedly committing a crime. One of three things will happen. You get released until your trial, you're denied bail and sit behind bars until trial, or you're offered bail, an amount of money that you have to pay to get out of jail until trial. It's like the court's insurance policy that you don't skip town. Once you show up to trial, you get that money back. Paying bail allows you to go back to your kids, your job, while awaiting trial. But what if you can't pay that bond?
It is an explicitly class and wealth-based discriminatory process for determining who gets to be free while they await trial and who is forced to remain incarcerated while they maintain their innocence.
So while a rich man charged with murder can afford his $250,000 bail, someone arrested for shoplifting who can't pay their $500 bail may sit behind bars for months before their trial date. At any given time in the U.S., there are nearly 450,000 people locked up awaiting trial, including both those denied bail and those unable to pay. There is another option. If your bail is set at, say, $70,000, but you don't have the money, you can pay a local bondsman to cover the fee for you. But here's the catch. Bondsmen take 10%. So while the court will return the $70,000 when you get to trial, you still owe that bondsman $7,000. That amount will accumulate interest until you can pay it back. And bonds companies are allowed to take extreme measures, including breaking into your home to collect their payments. It's a really lucrative industry with serious consequences for those who can't pay.
I was arguing a motion to get one of my clients out of jail. The bail was set at $100,000, well above his ability to pay. Because he couldn't pay the bail, and because the judge refused to release him without bail, he pled guilty.
Pleading guilty can get you a plea bargain down to a penalty of, say, community service. While the offense would be on your record, guilty or not, you wouldn't necessarily have to do time, because doing time is the last thing you want. In jail, you risk not just losing your job and relationships, but also the possibility of sexual assault, physical violence, and contracting a contagious disease.
And to ask somebody to endure that for more than a month, simply because they're too poor to pay bail, undermines the integrity of the entire criminal justice system.
The U.S. Bill of Rights bans what's called excessive bail, but even relatively low bail amounts, say $500 or $5,000, can be considered excessive to some. And it can mean the difference between life and death. Take the case of Sandra Bland, who was arrested in Texas for allegedly assaulting a police officer after a minor traffic violation. The court set Bland's bond at $5,000. She couldn't pay, so she was forced to stay in jail. 3 days later, she was found dead in her cell. The for-profit bail system is problematic, but there are alternatives. Kentucky became the first of four states to ban commercial bail in 1976, and 94% of felony defendants there still show up for trial. So if other systems are working, should the large majority of states continue to use for-profit bail?
This graph shows local jail inmates in the United States. In the past 20 years, that population has shot way up, and there's something surprising about that rise. You can see it only if you look at inmates with convictions. Around 1999, that population leveled off, meaning most of the rise came from this group, non-convicted prisoners. Every day in the U.S., nearly 500,000 people sitting in local jails haven't been convicted of anything. Why are most of them there? Because they can't afford cash bail. In 2009, the last year relevant federal data was released, the median bail was $10,000 for felony defendants, much higher than many Americans can afford. In a 2014 analysis of New York City jails, researchers found that only 14% of people given bail were able to pay at their initial hearing. Now, lawmakers and activists are trying to get rid of cash bail.
When bail is set unreasonably high, people are behind bars only because they are poor.
And I congratulate California for helping to lead the effort to do away with cash bail.
The bill to reform New Hampshire's bail system now headed to the governor's desk.
Courts are starting to eliminate cash bail, but that's creating another problem. What comes next? Let's look at someone committing a minor offense, like breaking an open container law. They are arrested and brought before a judge, who typically has three options. Deny bail and keep the defendant in jail until trial. release them without bail, which might include monitored supervision, or set bail. Cash bail is intended as collateral. It's supposed to be used to make sure people show up for their trials, not as a punishment or as a way to imprison. If the defendant pays bail, they can go free until trial, and when they return to court and their trial ends, they get their money back. But if they don't have enough money for bail, they go to jail. In 2013, the average number of days detained pre-trial was 28 for Philadelphia defendants with bail of $2,000 or less. During that time, a person's life can fall apart. If they don't show up for work, they can lose their job. If they are a parent, a child loses their caregiver. And if they live in a shelter, their housing is gone. While in jail, it's likely they will be given the option of pleading guilty. And with so much on the line, many people choose to plead guilty instead of waiting for a trial. That deal gives them their freedom, but a criminal conviction has long-term consequences, particularly for someone's ability to find work or housing. Cash bail isn't fair. For those who can't afford it, the system presents a series of problems that wealthier defendants are often able to avoid. The only difference between the two paths is how much money you have, not how guilty you are. So, what's a better alternative? DC courts effectively eliminated cash bail in 1992. Instead, judges use risk assessments to inform pretrial release decisions. If the person breaking an open container law had been arrested in DC, a court official would enter data about them into a risk assessment. Algorithms analyze the data and the defendant is scored for their likelihood to commit new crimes and return for trial. In most assessments, those results are delivered to the judge with a pretrial release recommendation that they can choose to follow at their own discretion. Risk assessments are supposed to help ensure that a judge's decisions are accountable to an objective standard instead of just a hunch. The data is encouraging. In 2017, 94% of defendants were released pretrial. 88% of those returned for every single court date. 86% weren't arrested during that time. And overall, the decision to remove cash bail saves DC courts close to $400 million a year. As more courts consider eliminating cash bail, it's likely that risk assessments will be used instead. But that's raising a concern that one bias system is being traded for another. Risk assessments use data about defendants' criminal histories without always considering other factors. And social prejudices and overpolicing make it more likely that low-income and minority Americans will have prior convictions. Reformers worry that relying on a score that doesn't acknowledge that bias risks perpetuating it. The ACLU even decided to oppose California's decision to eliminate cash bail, in part because of the debate over risk assessments. Let's say our defendant accepted the plea deal after being arrested for an open container. Then they get arrested again for another low-level offense, like shoplifting. The conviction from the earlier guilty plea would increase their risk assessment score, making it more likely that a judge sends them back to jail this time. But the assessment wouldn't show that they pleaded guilty because they couldn't afford to stay in jail while awaiting trial, after being unable to afford bail. On the plus side, judges also have other tools to inform their decisions. Conditional release programs give judges more pretrial options, including drug testing, in-person check-ins, and electronic monitoring. Still, those programs cost courts money and can be invasive for defendants. Less intensive support services like sending court reminders and providing transportation can also increase the chance that people return for trial. Providing additional pretrial options and services can help reduce the likelihood that judges become over-reliant on risk assessments or resort to their first option, keeping defendants in jail. Because many U.S. judges are elected by voters, they're incentivized to keep people locked up. When you're running to keep your job, you don't want to be the judge who let the violent criminal go free before trial. Using money to decide who goes to jail creates two very different paths. One for those who have money, and one for those who don't. And while alternative tools present their own problems, having more steps in the process can mean that fewer defendants overall are funneled to jail while waiting for their trial.
Okay. Excuse me. Now my throat's bugging me. So, that is pretty much the history of the bail system in the country, in case you didn't, know about it. If you're somebody that has never been arrested or, you know, never had to deal with anything like that, probably didn't know how that system works. You know, I've never been arrested, so I had no idea how it works and all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty much how that works. So I'm hopefully, you know, I haven't done a lot of research in that, but, you know, if it's as bad as the Eclipse made it sound to be, and it probably is, you know, a little bit reform couldn't hurt, you know, since, you know, the judicial system is probably in line for a good reform with a lot of the issues we have going on. Excuse me. My throat's bugging me now. So, I don't know what the deal is. So, yeah. So that's it. So hopefully, if you have to go through something like this, hopefully you can remember, you know, what, I don't know what the deal is. I guess, you know, it's one of those things where it hadn't happened to me. So, but, you know, do a little more research on it. So hopefully they can reform this because, you know, you know, to me, it doesn't sound fair that, you know, you've got two people arrested on the same charge. And depending on what your status is, whether or not you can get out of jail until the court date. So if you've got the money to get out, you know, you pay your money, you get out, and you're good until you go to court. But if you're somebody that doesn't have it and you've got to rely on, you know, if you don't have family members or a job or whatever you don't have, you've got to rely on a bail bondsman or something outside of that. You know, you've got to either find a way out or you sit there until you go to court. And plus, having people in jail and not charged with anything, you know, that's pretty banged up. You know, that's pretty much why the jails are full of people, because, you know, usually when you go to jail, usually you're charged with a crime. But if you're not charged with anything, you're just sitting up there taking up space for somebody that, you know, should be in there, but, you know, excuse me, I digress. So that's going to do it. I've got an issue with my throat and I need to go see if I can get something to drink, probably knock this out of my throat. So I'll be back next week. I'm not sure what I'm doing the show on next week, but I'll find something to talk about. So, that note, I'll see you next Tuesday. Peace out.